Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on credit cards when we come back. Well, in 1787, the writers of our Constitution put in this clause at Article 1, Section 10. It says, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt." That clause follows the biblical injunction on just weights and balances that we see in Leviticus 19, verses 35 and 36. Well, private business is carried on in gold and silver coin. It's public business that is conducted in commercial paper, you know, commercial paper like stocks and bonds, Federal Reserve notes, credit cards, debt, and usury. Back in 1965, Congress said that there was no difference in the value of a gold and a silver coin, or a clad coin or currency. And that's very true when you're dealing with banks or government or commercial industries. But out here in the real marketplace, out here in the real world, there's a 7-to-1 difference in purchasing power. And there's a 7-to-1 difference in the taxes that are due on that paper money. Now, God and our founding fathers didn't give us gold and silver coin for no good purpose. They knew that as a matter of law, gold and silver coin was absolutely necessary for us to deal in order for us to establish our property rights. Well, neither did our Congress and politicians take our gold and silver coin away from us for no good reason either. They knew, and they knew full well back in 1933, that in order to subjugate a free people, they would first have to take away their gold and silver coin, to take away the people's right to property and to destroy their property rights. Now, if you and I intend to regain our rights, duties, and capacities, then it's necessary for us to regain our property and property rights first. And that's because property is the legal foundation for all of our liberties. So let me teach you how to do just that. That's in our business school, which is now on compact disc for adult homeschool. Now, if you want more information about my private business school, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package first? That's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general, and it's informative and it's entertaining, it's educational, and best of all, it's free. And you can call right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Our business school is also available on compact disc now for adult home study. And if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, and click onto the email machine and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now before you forget. All right, we've been talking about credit cards, and one of the things that struck me about credit cards, especially in the frontline story that I told you about last time, was that there are 21 ways to steal from you. 21 ways. Thieves, identity thieves, and credit card thieves, etc., have 21 schemes. There might be 51 schemes out there, I don't know, but I've dug out 21 here for you. And I went over those 21 in an earlier program or two. 21 things that you'd have to know to be on your guard to eliminate, to stop an identity thief. Now, there's another way to stop identity theft with credit cards. Don't have any credit cards. That's my solution. I haven't had credit cards for many, many years, but it's not because of identity theft. I thought credit cards were the greatest thing since sliced white bread. After all, they're taken by everybody, and they're convenient, and they're just real neat. My problem is I couldn't control my spending. I don't know that I was a younger fellow then, you know. I was back in my 20s and 30s, you know, when I couldn't control my spending. And, of course, that's what the credit card companies are gambling on. That's what they're banking on. That's what they put the credit cards out there for. And, of course, when you're young, you got more guts than gumption, I guess, or more gumption than smarts, and so I couldn't handle it. But now, 30 years later, I haven't had a credit card now for 30 years. I can buy, sell, and trade and do business without credit cards. So if you think that you have to have them because it's the law of life, that's not true. That's not true at all. I've got electric lights here in my house. I've got indoor plumbing. And I drive an automobile just like you do. And I don't have any credit cards. So I'm living proof that you can live without credit cards and nobody is going to steal my identity. But most people are convinced that they can't live without credit cards. And so I thought, well, since they're so pervasive in our society, I guess we ought to be alerted to what some of the problems are in holding these credit cards. And so that's why I've been sharing with you these 21 tips. Now, in addition to those 21 tips, you merchants out there have 8 problems that credit card thieves are going to unload on you. So there's 8 things that you have to know in order to not prevent the theft. Nobody says that if you follow these 21 rules or these 8 rules over here, we can eliminate this problem. But we can lessen the danger to you. That's the best that they can tell you. That we can lessen it. They'll probably still get through and rip you off, but it won't be as often. It'll be better for you. So that being the case, then let's take a look at the concept of thou shalt not steal along this line. So last time I told you about a lady here in the Ozark who did a real estate transaction, and I want to cover that real estate transaction in a little more detail for you, because this lady doesn't deal in credit cards either. She buys, she sells, she trades, she doesn't have any credit cards. And last time I heard, she was able to pay her bills and get along in life. But anyway, she bought a house. And she paid, I'm going to give you some numbers here that don't necessarily have any relation to reality, but let's just take a number, $60,000. She buys a house for $60,000, and the price of gold happens to be $600 an ounce. So when she makes the transaction, she could have paid this guy with 100 ounces of gold. But this guy didn't want gold. And this is a time transaction. This transaction isn't being made in cash. It's a 7-year contract. So she paid $65,000 for the house, $5,000 down, $10,000 a year for 6 years. Now, the reason that she elected 6 years of payments is because of an obscure statute in the Bible that tells you that you can't have debts that string out past the year of release. So every 7 years, the creator of the universe, this is the God of Abraham now, he decided that debt was bad for people, and that at least every 7 years you had to be out of debt. Everybody in the country would be debt-free, at least for an instant, once every 7 years. It's a wild new concept, of course, I understand that, but I just thought I'd point that out to you, that God himself thought that you ought to be debt-free at least once in a while, once every 7 years. Now, of course, in our society, you're in debt, and you're in debt forever. And FDR, Franklin D. Roosevelt, started the process back in 1934, I believe it was, when they came up with a plan for home ownership, and they moved the debt period from 7 years, which we Americans followed up until 1934. So we followed Leviticus chapter 25 in the United States of America. We practiced that law, the Jubilee and the year of release law, well, not the Jubilee, but at least the year of release law, until 1934, when Franklin Roosevelt and the Democrats extended the house payment, the mortgage period, from 7 years to 10 years. And then, of course, it went from 10 years to 15 years, and then 15 to 20, and 20 to 25, and then to 30. Now there are mortgages out there that run for 40 years. In fact, there are mortgages now that are interest only. We have adjustable rate mortgages and balloon payments and house buying with no money down. I mean, they've got deals out there now that just defy description. It's to bury you in debt so that you never get out. That you will, for the rest of your life, be a perpetual credit debt serf. Now, we used to have slavery and bond servitude, but we've exchanged that now for debt. which works just as effectively. In fact, maybe it's even more effective. It includes more people. It includes not just the blacks. It includes everybody in the society that goes into debt. So you can thank Franklin D. Roosevelt for that. But now getting back to Our Lady over here, Our Lady wants to make a profit, but she's not paying any interest, and she doesn't charge any interest. Now, a lot of times people say, well, you know, we got to have interest so that we can make a profit. Now, this lady is going to make a profit, or at least she's intending to. She intends to. And she's not paying any interest, and she's not charging any interest. And, of course, her deal was to the guy here, said, well, here's what I'll do. I'll buy this piece of property from you, and I'm going to pay you this amount of money down, and I'm going to pay you over 6 years. So I'm not going to pay you over 15 years or 20 years. I'm going to pay you in six, and I'm going to pay you in gold. And the guy said, no. He said, no, no. I do not want gold. I want real money. He said with specificity that he wanted United States currency. So this lady, she doesn't deal in U.S. currency. She deals in gold and silver. But she said, well, okay, that's fine. That's fine. I'll be happy to pay you in $100 bills. You know, those pieces of paper with Ben Franklin on the face of them. She said, I'll pay you with those. And so she went over and she took a can, coffee can, and she put 100 ounces of gold in the coffee can. And then, when the first payment came up, she reached in the coffee can, and she handed him the $10,000 that she owed him. And now she's got in theory $50,000 worth of gold left in the can. But now, last time I explained to you that the dollar is losing its value. You remember that? And this is what we call the dollar index. The dollar index. And you might see that on Lou Dobbs or on the Nightly Business Report, you know, on PBS, you know, the U.S. dollar is a fiat currency, but then so is all the rest of the currencies in the world. They're all fiat currencies. And the more that you print of them, or the more that the government makes, then the cheaper they become. And the United States, over the past 6 years under the Bush administration, they've been printing about 10%. Increasing the money supply by about 10% a year. Now, when you increase the money supply, you increase inflation. And this inflation takes about 18 to 36 months to manifest itself. So if you people have been paying attention at all, did you notice that in the year 2000, you know, say go back here 6 years, that the price of gasoline and the price of oil was about, I think it was $15 a barrel, maybe 20. And then it shot up to about $60 a barrel where it is today. So the price of gasoline has gone up. And we were paying about $1.15 or $1.20 a gallon here for gas. And now it's $2.34. So the price of gas has doubled over the last two or three years. Have you noticed that? I mean, it didn't go up just by 10% a year. I mean, it doubled over the past 6 years. And if you'll take a look at a lot of things that you buy out there pretty commonly, and if you think about it or you went back and you researched it out, you'll see that prices have doubled. In fact, in many cases, they've doubled. But overall, throughout the economy, prices have increased by 30%. So the value of your dollar has gone down by 30%. Or put another way, if you were making $1,000 a month in 2000, you got to be making $1,333 a month today. One-third more in order for you to still have the same purchasing power that you had 6 years ago. And this brings up this thing of constant dollars because, you know, most people, if they're making more money, they really feel good about that. And that's the ruse that government uses to deceive you and to steal from you. Governments are constantly stealing from us. And they have some of the most sophisticated methodologies, like sending you to public school to dumb you down so that you never figure out and that you're unable to figure out because you don't have the mental capacity to figure out how I'm stealing from you. So unlike a thief on the street who sticks a gun in your ribs and steals your money arithmetically, government comes along, educates you into becoming a fool, and then they steal from you constantly geometrically for the rest of your life, as I showed you in the last program. All right, now how is this lady going to make a profit off of this transaction in 6 years by using gold coin? It's very simple. You see, back in 2000, the price of gold was $300 an ounce, and today it's $600. So the price of gold has doubled over the last 6 years. And at the same time, the dollar has gone down by one-third. So actually, she's made money by dealing in gold just on the paper versus gold over the past 6 years. But there's an added profit for this lady because the man who insisted upon paper money over the six-year period of time is going to have a decrease in his purchasing power, and the lady with the gold is going to have an increase in her purchasing power, and the difference in the purchasing power is going to be her profit. All right, now let me show you how this will come out. It's worked this way over the last 5,000 years, and I think it'll continue to work this way over the next six. The lady takes a coffee can, it's a Folgers coffee can, and she puts 100 ounces of gold into it, and every year she has to take $10,000 worth of gold out of it and take it to the gold broker and cash it in. But every time she cashes it in, she's going to get more and more paper dollars for the same amount of gold. Isn't that just special? All right, so she takes the paper money in constant dollars, and she pays the guy what she owes him. The contract says, you owe me $60,000, $10,000 a year for 6 years. So for the years 2005, 2006, 2007, 2008, 2009, and 2010, she's got to pay this guy $10,000 a year in constant dollars. But those dollars are becoming cheaper and cheaper. So as she makes these payments, the price of gold continually goes up. And as the price of gold goes up, it'll hit $1,200 an ounce by the year 2010. And when it hits $1,200 an ounce, she won't have made any profit in the inflation. That's not where the profit's at. She's going to make the profit at the end of the period of time. She'll have 50 ounces of gold left in the can, and 50 ounces of gold will buy the $60,000 worth of paper to pay this guy what it was that he demanded. See how simple that is? Now, when you deal in just weights and balances the way God told us to, it just works out in the long run that you actually make a little extra money. Now, she doesn't practice usury and interest, and the guy that's selling the house, he doesn't practice usury and interest, but he practices unjust weights and balances with paper money. And most of us have come to rely upon paper money, to accept paper money. Now, our founding fathers thought that they had banned paper money with Article 1, Section 10 of our Constitution, but they weren't counting on private banks issuing their own paper money. And people are motivated, you know, by vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear. And it's that lust and greed that gets to us. Lust and greed. And so we accept this paper. We get used to it. And then we're unable to understand or identify how we're being stolen from. So let me go back and explain that to you. Remember the little story I told you yesterday about this thing of geometric progression and the little boy with the horseshoes and the rule of 72. Let's go back to 1960, and we were all buying, selling, and trading and doing our thing. Now, in 1960, if you were making, you know, $5 an hour, I mean, you were making a lot of money. Skilled help working in the woods were getting $3 an hour. In 1960, as a machinist, I was getting $3.27 an hour. You know, that's skilled help. Now, today, the average wage in America today is $16.57 an hour. So we just call it 16 bucks. If you're skilled help, you're probably making 22. If you're a professional, you're probably making 38. But back in 1960, you know, we weren't making that kind of money. But then a house didn't cost $200,000-$400,000, you know, in 1960. You could buy houses all day long, you know, for $25,000, $20,000, $18,000. So we were paying less money for our houses, and we're paying less money for our gasoline. Gasoline in 1960 was about 30 cents a gallon. And so we got along quite well. In fact, we got along so well that Mom didn't have to work out in the marketplace. Mom stayed home with Beaver, and Dad went out into the workplace, and he made enough money to support his family all by himself. Today, it takes Mom and Dad working in order to make the standard of living that we've all become used to, but it's not quite as good today in purchasing power as it was in 1960. Now, the inflation rate from 1960 to 2000 was 4.8% compounded annually for 40 years. Now, remember the rule of 72? All right. So let's start off, and let's say that you were making pretty good money, you know, in 1960. You were making $3 an hour. So let's take 3 times 2,000 hours in a year. And so you're making $6,000 a year. Well, how much money would you have to be making today in order to maintain the same purchasing power as you had back in 1960? So if you take $6,000 a year, and then you take today, you're making 16.57. And let's take that times 2,000 hours. And then you need to be making $33,140 in order to make the same standard of living. $33,140. And today we find that we're making $48,000. Now we got a problem with a thing called taxes. It is true that today you are making more money in constant dollars. That is, today you're making $50,000 a year. Well, 48. I think that's the median average today, 48,000. But today, you got two taxes at $48,000 that bite pretty heavily into your income. The first is Social Security, which takes 16%. And you've got the income tax, and that takes 17%. And 17 and 16 just happen to be 33, and that's one-third. One-third. Now, back in 1960, we were paying income tax, but we weren't paying that kind of tax. In fact, the Social Security tax back in 1960 was only about 4 or 5%. And to show you how those percentage points add up on you over here, let's take our $48,000 times 0.33, and we got to pay $16,000 in taxes. So take $33,000 and add $16,000 to that. Isn't that about the $48,000? All right. So when you take those taxes out, and that's just two. There's 14 taxes now, but there's those two taxes out. All of a sudden, you're down to where you were in 1960. So you haven't made any progress in your purchasing power from 1960 to 2000. But it gets worse than that. And that's why Mom had to go to work. Mom had to go to work because of the price inflation that goes along with it. You see, the price inflation is never exactly what the actual monetary inflation is. And what happens is that the merchant, when he finally raises his prices, he doesn't raise his prices incrementally. He raises his prices to what it has to be and what it ought to be for the future. So here's what happens. In 1950, a cup of coffee cost a nickel. In 1930, a cup of coffee cost a nickel. So for that 30-year period, the price of coffee stayed relatively stable. Even though prices were going up little by little every year, even though inflation was going on little by little every year, by the time you got to 1960, you know, you're still paying, or 1950, you're still paying a nickel. But sometime during the 50s, I forgot exactly when this happened, but all of a sudden the price of coffee went from a nickel, not to 6 cents, 7 cents, and 8 cents, it went from a nickel to a dime. Just went from a nickel to a dime. Did you notice what happened to the price of gasoline over the last couple of 3 years? I mean, it didn't go up, you know, from $1.15 to $1.20 and $1.25, $1.30, $1.35, $1.40, $1.45, $1.50. No. When the price of gas started to take off, you know, when the price of oil was going up every day, hell, the price of gas just practically doubled in about a year's time. And that's the way inflation works. And that's because there's a natural desire on the part of merchants to hold their prices, hold the line on prices. And so they take it in the shorts for a while, and they lop off jobs for a while, they merge for a while, they cost cut for a while, and then finally when that doesn't work anymore, they raise prices. So the last thing they want to do is raise prices because it upsets the customers. And the customers are then looking for cheaper prices, and of course there's always this competition going on. And so finally when the competition wears out and everybody comes to the realization that we've got to raise prices, they do. And so it wasn't just ExxonMobil that raised the price, it was everybody raised the price of gas. The net result of all of this is that since 1973, we have not had a wage increase. We get more money, but we don't get more purchasing power. That's the bottom line. Our purchasing power is going down. We're actually able to buy less today with the more dollars we have in our pockets than we were back in the 1960s. That's the way this theft is being carried out, and people love it. My God, they love it. Last year, Social Security gave you people, new Social Security recipients, a 3.8% raise, and this year, they're going to do the same. They're going to give you about 3.8%. Because the government controls what they call the Consumer Price Index, the CPI. And they lie about it. See, they manipulate the numbers. And after all, it comes from God, the government, so therefore it has to be true. And we are taught in school, you know, to rely upon these government statistics. So the government comes out and they say, well, inflation's running at 3.8%. Excuse me, kids. The price of gas doubled. That's 100%, not 3.8. But they're giving you a raise every year of 3.8%. And if you take a look at prices, prices aren't going up at 3.8%, they're going up by 10%. And that's correct, because they're printing 10% more money every year. So the real inflation rate is the amount of money that's being printed. So if you want to know, here's what causes inflation. A lot of times people say, well, I don't know what causes inflation. Inflation is caused by printing more money than there are goods and services out there. And so the government controls the CPI, and they control your mind. They control your thinking processes. And so your Social Security check went up by $38, or went up by 3.8%. So let's suppose you're making $1,000 a month. So you were getting $1,000 last month. This month you get $1,038. But prices didn't go up $38. Prices went up $100. You really need $1,100 to maintain your standard of living, but you got a $38 raise. Boy, it makes you feel real good. You actually took a $62 cut in your standard of living. And this has been going on since 1973. And that's why mom's working out there in the workplace. And that's why you have all these mergers. That's why you have all of this outsourcing of jobs to India. It's the competitive pressure that's put on business to hold prices down. While government prints more and more money, business is constrained in raising their prices, and so they have to do something. And so they merge with another company, and then they use the payroll department of one of the two companies and eliminate those jobs in the company they just merged with. So the payroll department of this company now does the payroll of both companies, and so they make a savings there. And those savings through mergers or savings through offshoring or outsourcing of the labor to India or Bangladesh, or the importation of products from China, which cost less because, after all, you're only paying Chinese $2 a day and you have to pay an American, you know, maybe $100 a day or $80 a day at $10 an hour. So when it's all said and done, we're all coming out poorer and poorer. And poorer and poorer is caused by inflation, which is caused by paper money. And the biggest source of paper money in the United States today is credit cards. Credit cards. I related this to you the other day that I talked to a merchant, and he said 3% of his sales are done in checks and credit cards. Only 7% of his sales are done in cash. And that comports with the official statistics. The government told us the truth there. Government doesn't lie to us all the time. See, they lie to us about 75% of the time. And they tell us the truth about 25% of the time and keep us confused 100% of the time. The government doesn't lie to you all the time. They tell you the truth some of the time. And then when you see that, well, it told us the truth. Well, then you can rely on your government, can't you? And so then you rely upon them on, say, the CPI or the producer price index and various statistics, and they're lying to you. That's what the bottom line is. So tuck that one away in your heart, boys and girls, and let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law School or the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective, 8 schools in all. Now, the Law School, or the Gordon Law School, is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, again, go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through the webpage. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one for yourself. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Now, we're offering a new class on health and healing, which covers the alternative methods, or alternative healing methods, being used for the treatment and healing of degenerative diseases, cancer, of course, being number one, which now affects about one out of every two Americans, or about 50% of us, and how to prevent these degenerative diseases and abdominal fat, the use of application or application of essential oils, super nutritional foods containing more nutrients and fewer calories. And the class also includes hands-on teaching, paperwork, allergic reaction testing and training, so that you can do this at home, personally and privately, acupressure application and training, so you can find the pressure points, and much, much more to contribute to your ongoing health. All right, this class will be February 5th through the 9th. That's February the 5th through February the 9th here in Isabella, Missouri. If you're interested, give my wife Jackie a call at the school here at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. All right, talking about credit cards, giving you a few pointers here on how to keep from getting ripped off on credit cards. Of course, I keep telling you, you know, the best way in my view to do that is don't have any, but then, you know, I'm not here to tell you how to live your life. Told you about the 1927 mortgages. In 1927, we Americans were still practicing the year of release, at least insofar as mortgages are concerned. 7 years was the maximum time frame on a mortgage. FDR raised that to 10 years in 1934, and then he kept raising that. And, of course, the business world has now raised these, and we have these exotic mortgages today. We have put you people into perpetual credit debt serfdom. And that's where you're supposed to be. That was the plan. By the way, that's why they took our gold away from us. I'm going to share this one with you. If you have gold coin and you pay a debt, the gold coin pays your debts at law. But if you pay a debt with paper money, you know, you go down to the store and you give them a $50 bill and you walk out with the shoes, you haven't paid the debt. The debt's not paid. That debt, as a matter of law, has been discharged in equity. It's a discharge rather than a payment. And that word discharge versus payment is very important, because when you go into bankruptcy, they don't come back and say, now you are paid out of your bankruptcy. They say you are discharged in bankruptcy. Discharge. You haven't paid the debt, but we're going to forgive the debt. Now, we got a law that says thou shalt not steal. So if you went into the White Front store and you took something out of the store and you didn't pay for it, that's called a theft. So you to avoid the theft, we have to pay for it. And so we use the word pay, P-A-Y, but it's not paid. It's discharged with paper. If you paid it with gold or silver, you'd be paying your debt. Now, government did that because you cannot tax property, and gold and silver are property. So to get past our Constitution and to get past our God, what we did was we came up with a novel new approach. So in 1914, we created this thing called the Federal Reserve. That's a private banking consortium. Congress gave them a monopoly on the making of money, and they call them Federal Reserve notes. And it gives them the legitimacy of being a government agency when in fact they're not. And so they print this paper money. And now the first thing they did to get you to take it was that they made it at par value, so you could take your gold coin and exchange it for an equal number of Federal Reserve notes, and vice versa. Then in 1933, they took the convertibility away from you. But you still had silver coin. Now, in the Bible, there's two forms of payment. It's gold coin or silver coin. You can pay in gold and silver. You can also pay in barter. I mean, you can pay for a horse with a cow, you know, something like that. So as time went on, 1964, President Johnson decided that, you know, it's too expensive to make silver coins, so we're going to make clad coins. So they took our silver away. Within 3 years, from 65 to 68, all the silver coin disappeared. And today, a $1,000 bag of junk silver coin sells for $10,000. About 10 to 1. And your gold coins today, the last time I took a look at one, let's say you've got a $20 double eagle. And that's a, you know, say a 1900 coronet double eagle, $20 gold piece, has 96.5% gold or thereabouts. 96% gold in a double eagle. So it's practically an ounce. That ounce of gold today sells for $600 plus. $600 plus. So $20 in purchasing power back in 1930 has now moved up to $600, and the price of gold is still underpriced, you know, by, oh, at least $900. $900 compared to 1980. So while gold is still underpriced, it's a tremendous value at $600. It's priced at less than half. But that's how much inflation has moved into the marketplace. In fact, when you do the numbers for inflation, here's how it shakes out. In the last 6 years, that is from 2000 to 2006, you have lost 30% of your purchasing power. You're getting more dollars in your pocket, but you've lost 30% of your purchasing power. You have to have 30% more money to buy the same amount of goods and services that you bought in the year 2000. Got to have 30% more. Go back to 1980. You got to have 50% more. You've lost 50% of your purchasing power in 26 years. 50%. Go back to 1971. You've lost 90% of your purchasing power. Now go back to 1930, you've lost 98% of your purchasing power. It now takes a dollar to buy what 2 cents would buy in 1930. Got to have a dollar today to buy what 2 cents would buy. Here's another little statistic that'll blow your socks off. If all of the money in circulation, you take all the money that I've got and all the money that you've got and all the money that Margaret and Aunt Bessie and everybody else has, all of your claims, take them down to Walmart and Best Buy and Vantage and everybody else, and we all go into the stores at the same time to buy the goods and services that are out there, we can all collect 2 cents on the dollar. That's how much is available. Put another way, if you were to take a look at the imports coming into the United States, we Americans export $200 billion a year and we import $800 billion a year. That's a discrepancy or a difference of $600 billion a year. We rely upon foreigners to produce the goods that we buy in this country by about 25, 50, 75, 100. 75% of what we consume in this country comes from overseas. And that includes half of our food. Food, F-O-O-D, you know. America used to be a food exporting, net exporter, but now we're just about even. We just about produce and export. And, of course, if you take a look at the common table vegetables and berries and kiwis and all the things that we import into the country, half of the table vegetables, half of the food that you eat every day. See, you don't eat corn every day. You don't eat wheat every day. So we're exporting a lot of corn and a lot of wheat, a lot of soybeans. But we're importing berries and kiwis and grapes, you know, from other places. And I say that's very dangerous. In fact, it's going to come back and bite us in the butt in the final analysis here. So now I told you about the constant dollars and the house deal over here, didn't I? Okay. And the year of release, that's in Leviticus chapter 25. If you want to learn about the year of release and how that works, well, Leviticus chapter 25 will tell you that story. Now there's a law here that tells us thou shalt not steal. And credit cards are a methodology by which we steal. And we've been induced into this theft enterprise by government because government is a thief. Governments steal. God, do they steal. Not just through taxes, because taxes are something that you agree to. You join up with the income tax through your Social Security account. You agreed to pay that income tax. That's why we said it's voluntary. Now, what you're not volunteering for is to have your paycheck ripped off every week or to have the money that you deal with rip you off every week. And so when we take a look at our monetary system today, our gold and silver coins that are being minted by the United States Mint, many of you people probably don't know this, but in case you don't know, I'm going to tell you. Every day, our government mints 4 gold coins, the 5, 10, 25, and $50 gold piece. Every day, they're out there minting them. And every day, they're minting silver dollars. So we've had silver dollars and 5, 10, 25, and $50 gold pieces since 1986. And those of us that deal in gold coin are dealing in the same gold coin that we were dealing in 1900, 1850, and in 1800. And those of you that are dealing in paper money are dealing in the same paper money that the private banks were turning out in 1800 and 1850 and 1890 and 1950 and they're turning out today. So it's a choice that you make. And most people spend their paper money in the form of plastic. We call it plastic money, but it's part and parcel of the Federal Reserve and the national banking system. That's what it's all predicated upon. Now, in America, we have just about from the very beginning, 1796 to the present, had a dual monetary system, and it was suspended from 1933 to 1986. So from 33 to 86, we didn't have our mint, our government, minting gold and silver coins. Well, they minted silver coins until 65, but from 65 to 86, we didn't have either gold or silver coin. Now we've got our gold and silver coin back. But let me give you a little history on this gold and silver coin, because governments have been robbing us. Hell, even when we had gold coin, they were robbing us. Here's an illustration. Take a British gold sovereign. You know, the government of Great Britain, those wonderful people over there in England, the people that we had to fight two wars to get our independence from. The English people over there have a coin called a sovereign. It's called the British gold sovereign. And a sovereign is about a quarter of an ounce. Now, we have a quarter ounce coin in this country. It's called a $10 gold piece. That's our new one. It's called a quarter eagle. And our quarter eagle has 0.2500% gold in it. In other words, it has one full quarter ounce of gold in it. But the British sovereign, which is about the same size, has 0.2354% gold. Now, that's pretty close to a quarter of an ounce of gold, but it isn't quite. And I'm using this British gold sovereign here as an example, because I'll show you that American gold coins do the same thing. In fact, most governments around the world have been shaving their coins for hundreds of years. See, before we had paper, we had inflation. You know, before we had paper money in a Federal Reserve, we had government stealing from us. So it isn't something new. It's been going on for thousands of years. But to show you how this one here works, if you've got a price, and I've got a price, so I'm going to describe it. We sell a school here, and the school sells for 4.5. That's 4.5 ounces of gold. And a question arises, well, could I pay with U.S. gold coin? And the answer is yes. And in U.S. gold coin, in the new eagles, not double eagles now, but the new money, the new eagles, they're $50. And so what you'd do is you'd pay me $225 in gold coin. Now, let's suppose you came to me and you said, well, I don't have these U.S. gold coins, but I've got a bunch of these British sovereigns. Would you take those? So let's suppose, for the sake of our discussion, I said, okay, what would the equivalent number be? Well, we would look at a quarter of an ounce of gold, and the answer is 18 quarter ounces would make 4.5 ounces of gold. But 18 British sovereigns doesn't make 4.5 ounces of gold. So let me do the math here for you. Take 0.2354, and let's multiply that times 18, and that equals 4.2372. Now, don't get bogged down in the decimals here. I'll just write it down, 4.2372. And then what that boils down to is that you're just about a quarter of an ounce, a little over a quarter of an ounce short. So if you were to pay me with 18 U.S. quarter ounce coins, I would have 4.5 ounces of gold. But if you paid me with 18 British sovereigns, you would be giving me 4.25 ounces of gold. You would be shorting me 1/4 of an ounce of gold. Now, 1/4 of an ounce of gold is quite a bit, because if gold is $600 an ounce, 1/4 of an ounce is $150. You know, in Federal Reserve note dollars. $150. So, I did a transaction here one day, and a guy from down in Austin, Texas, he said, well, now, I don't have these U.S. gold coins, but I do have these British sovereigns. Would you take these British sovereigns? So I said, okay, I'll take the British sovereigns, and I'm pretty broad-minded, and I figured, now this guy is going to bring me 18 of these British sovereigns, and I'm going to take it in the shorts by 1/4 of an ounce. And I know that, see. And it's close enough to 1/4 of an ounce that most people trade those at 1/4 of an ounce. And, you know, if we were doing a $150 transaction, you know, you come into the store and you're going to buy $150 worth of groceries, you know, Federal Reserve note dollars. And instead, you paid it in gold, and you gave the merchant 1/4 of an ounce of gold. That would be $150 in gold coin at $600 an ounce. But if you gave him a sovereign, it would be $146. He'd be $4 short. But shucks, you know, for a $150 sale and you're $4 short, who's gonna complain about that? But if you did 18 of those at $4, you know, all of a sudden, 4 times 18 is 72. You're $72 short. So I thought this guy was gonna come in here and he's gonna pay me, you know, 18 of these, but he didn't. He came in and gave me 19. I counted them out, there's 19. And I said to the guy, I said, well, evidently you know how to count. And then he said, yeah, they're a little bit short. And your wife said it was 4.5 ounces. And I said, well, thank you very much. I appreciate your honesty. So what that boils down to is that there's an example of a guy that's honest to a fault. And that shows a lot about people's character. You know, that it shows that the guy is conscientious. It shows that he's honest. And it shows that he can count, that he knows that a sovereign doesn't have a full quarter of an ounce of gold in it. Now, how long has that been going on? We'll take a look at our U.S. $20 double eagle. It's 3.25% short of a full ounce. Now, why does the government do that? Why does the government give us a coin that they call, you know, gold in the old days, just back in 1920, let's just pick a number, pick a date, sold for $20.67 an ounce. And so a $20 double eagle passed as an ounce of gold. But it didn't have an ounce of gold in it. It's got 96.5% of an ounce of gold. I forgot the exact fineness of it, but it's, you know, 9650, I think it is, or something close to that, 9650. Now, it's close enough to an ounce, but, you know, the government could have put a full ounce in it. In fact, today, in the year 2006, when the government of the United States of America, I can't speak for the rest of you, but when our government puts out a $50 gold coin today, it has one full ounce, 480 grains of silver in it, or gold in it, rather. And our silver dollar has a full 480 grains of silver in it. And then there's another way to steal from you called fineness. You know, it's just like these credit cards. I mean, there's more ways to steal from us than there are people to count them up. Now, I showed you 21 ways to steal from you on your credit cards, but the government has probably as many ways or more to steal from you in their coinage and in their minting. And inflation, in reality, is a theft by government. The government is stealing from us by printing more money than there are goods and services. This war in Iraq is a big theft. They haven't put it on budget. They're just printing up the money in the form of bonds, and they just sell the bonds and they go to war and they go out and buy the material they need for the war and pay the troops their wages with borrowed money. And all of this money is off budget. It's just a theft. That's what it boils down to. And the people of America don't care. You know, it's all right by them. And that's because the people of America are thieves. People who deal in paper money deal in unjust weights and balances. And people that deal in unjust weights and balances are dealing in theft. And the God of Israel said, "Thou shalt not steal." Can you remember? That's one of the Ten Commandments. And so the preacher in church, when he passes the offering plate around, he expects that you're going to put $20 bills into that offering plate. He doesn't expect you to put gold and silver coin in there. And I've never heard a preacher ever get up in the pulpit and say, "Now listen, let me tell you, boys and girls, that our God gave us a law that says thou shalt not steal, and the use of $20 Federal Reserve notes and credit cards and checks and all the rest of this crap is a theft, and we ought to stop doing it." I haven't heard anybody do that. And so, because of that, we send our children to public schools, and our public school teachers expect
that your kid is going to pay for his milk with a Clad coin, that he's going to pay for his lunch with Clad coins and paper money issued by the government, which is demonstrably a thieving institution, an institution of thieves. And then it isn't just this generation, you know, Bill Clinton and George Bush, that are a generation of thieves. Hell, we've been thieves in this country, this is the United States now, since Woodrow Wilson organized that Federal Reserve Bank back in 1913. And it goes back beyond that. Hell, Ulysses S. Grant and Abraham Lincoln were issuing paper money, and they were lying to us and stealing from us in the Civil War and in the aftermath of the Civil War. Hell, it went back before that. Even our founding fathers, George Washington served as president until 1796. In 1796, there was this new U.S. National Bank created, which put out paper money. So even our founding fathers chartered, issued a corporate charter to a bank in 1896. So even our founding fathers were hypocrites when it got right down to where the rubber meets the road. So I'm just pointing this out to you so that you can understand that paper money works a theft, and it works a theft on everybody that uses it. Now, I told you today a very poignant lesson, a very poignant story of a man who, by the way, has letters after his name. This guy's been to college. He's educated, well-educated, very professional. And he insists that he wants paper money to pay for this house. And this hillbilly lady is going to pay him in paper money, and he's going to get paid $30,000 for his house in purchasing power. He's going to sell a house for $60,000, and he's going to get paid the full $60,000, and when he spends his $60,000, he's going to get $30,000 worth of goods. And the lady who's dealing in just weights and balances, who is not a thief, who is dealing in gold and silver coin, is going to pay him his $60,000 in paper, which is what he wanted. And she's going to make 50 ounces of gold, which is $30,000, and that's going to be her profit for obeying God and keeping his commandments. So it's just kind of built into the system. If you use unjust weights and balances, you can expect to be stolen from. You can expect to lose. And Americans today are losing, and they're losing their shirts. The reason that you're unable to make ends meet is because you're dealing in commercial paper, Federal Reserve notes. And that's why Mary has to go to work, Bob, in order to help you make enough money to pay the mortgage and pay the bills. Because you won't deal in just weights and balances, you deal in unjust weights and balances, and the penalty that you're paying is poverty. And there's no such thing as a broken law without a penalty. That's the bottom line. No such thing as a crime without a punishment. And then the punishment that we're paying is poverty, debt, and loss. I'm about out of time. I'm going to have to break off here and give you a reminder that you have been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. And it is open to individuals by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. And if you'd like more information, then please go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And remember, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, our time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.